Why don't you just give me a quick rundown of the sort of services that your organization provides and where you provide them?
Okay, basically what GCAP provides is services for people that are living with HIV. We have two types of housing. We have transitional housing, which we can provide for people that are homeless or in imminent danger of becoming homeless, and we allow them to stay here for up to 6 months while they work with a case manager to try to find some sort of permanent housing, whether that be supportive or unsupportive housing. What I mean by supportive or unsupportive is like they pay for it all on their own, or that they get into a shelter plus care or something like a Section 8 voucher. We also do have a permanent housing facility. That's a three unit apartment building. It has a studio and two-bedroom units for people that are living with HIV at below market rates, which is kind of nice in this community. We have a food bank that we work with, the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, once a month that our clients are actually get to go up there and do their own shopping in a special area that's been set aside for them. It's after hours, so it's only people that are living with HIV that are at their shopping. So it also not only serves as a time to get food, but also as a time for some social interaction. We really don't have a support groups as such in this town, but it kind of serves kind of like that, so everybody can kind of touch base and they realize they're not alone living with this disease. The final thing we have specifically geared for people that are HIV positive is emergency assistance. We, through various grants and our fundraisers, we're able to provide funds for people that may be short on their rent or utilities or may have medical expenses, say they're in the donut hole of their insurance. We also, a big one we provide is bus passes for people so they can get to and from doctor's appointments, work, all those kind of things.
So the people you're serving over how what is there a particular geographical area that you serve?
Well, we serve a 10-county area of East Central Illinois, all the way up to Ford and Iroquois County, down to Edgar and Coles. To the west, we go to DeWitt and Piatt, and then all the way over to the state line with Vermilion. Most of our clients are in the Champaign County, but that's followed closely behind with Vermilion and Coles County.
Okay. Just a little side question here. Is there an organization that serves the Decatur-Macon County area?
Not such as this, really. I mean, not like GCAP. I mean, they might fall a little bit under like the Fifth Street Renaissance out of Springfield, but nothing quite like GCAP is in Decatur.
The people that you're serving, I mean, a lot of these services are for people who don't have much money to speak of. Is that because they didn't have much money to begin with, or because the medical expenses themselves have been such a drain, or because they haven't been able to work because of the disease?
I think it's a little bit of all three. I mean, there's definitely some people that just didn't really have that much beforehand that become infected because it does proportionately does affect the lower income socioeconomic class. But also there are some people that had been working for a long period of time, and because the medications or some of the side effects of the medications, they just were not able to work anymore.
How much does the health care for just keeping things together with HIV, how much does that cost?
If you didn't have insurance, I don't think there's a person living in this area that could really afford it because you're looking at easily $25,000 a year just for the medications, plus then all your doctor's visits and all the lab work and all those kind of things. Fortunately, there are programs out there that help. Carle Clinic is wonderful with their patient assistance programs. There's Illinois has administers the local AIDS drug assistance program that helps pay for people's medications. Bryant White Act helps pay for doctor's visits and medical visits and those kind of things. So if somebody doesn't have insurance, a lot of the things are covered. And especially if they happen to be in that gray area between having their own private insurance and Medicare or Medicaid. So there are the services out there. It just takes some time to navigate to figure out exactly where they can get them at. And that's where, like, a case manager through Champaign-Urbana Public Health's infectious disease section is very helpful because they are very well acquainted with all the different things that are out there. And most people that are diagnosed in this area are referred to a case manager so they can make sure they get their services in line.
So is it your experience that most people or all the people that you work with are able to get the medical care they need for this disease?
I would say 95%. There's going to be a small percentage that there's just no funding available out there. I mean, as far as their HIV, that is taken care of. It might be some of their other underlying illnesses or illnesses they may have on top of that that may be a little bit harder to find the funding to take care of.
What's it like today? And I'm asking you because you're a person who is HIV positive yourself, and so you have to live with the disease and all the medical care needed. What does that mean? What sort of medical maintenance do you have to pay attention to on a day-to-day basis?
Well, the biggest one is, of course, remembering to take my medications every day. I mean, I'm fortunate that I just have one pill every day that I have to take for my HIV. But I know a lot of people that take a lot more than that. Then there's always the routine office visits to the doctor and get blood work every 3 months. So, I mean, it's just kind of trusting your own body when it tells you it's time to slow down a little bit because you're doing too much. You know that you have to, because I have found my own personal experience. If I don't, that's when I start not feeling like I should, like I start getting sick. I feel more susceptible. But I think that can be said for a lot of people, too, with any kind of illness that they may have, that you just have to listen to your body a lot more.
So daily life is kind of normal?
It's been long enough that I've been living with the disease now that I don't know how else you can describe it, but I feel like I live a fairly normal life. I mean, I work a 40-hour week. I see friends. I go out on weekends and to dinner or to a movie, those kind of things. So in many ways, my life is normal. The only time that it isn't is I think when I stop and look back at what it was like 10, 15, 20 years ago. That how people lived before the advent of all the modern medications, before the disease was understood as well as it is today. And it kind of really, if you kind of wonder, what would happen if all these medications were to go away, if something was to happen that it would stop? Would my life be like theirs was back then?
The clients that you work with, are all of them as good a shape as you, as health-wise? What sort of situations are they dealing with?
They have a variety of different other situations. I mean, they may have other disabilities that they may be dealing with on a regular basis. We have, of course, there's a lot of people that have diagnoses of mental health issues and substance abuse issues that are HIV positive. That are constantly seeking treatment for that. And those are two big hurdles to have to overcome along with being HIV positive.
That brings up the question, if this is, if getting the right treatment for HIV and AIDS requires a certain amount of discipline and taking medications at the right time, just making sure you don't overextend yourself, is everybody able to do that?
Unfortunately not. There's a lot of people that don't. I mean, that's one thing that recently there's been an adherence counselor hired to work in the area, and I think he's been making great strides, but there's still some people that it's just too much for them to have to remember to take something every day.
And the adherence counselor, is that someone working for your organization? Or
no, actually they work through Carl Hospital.
Okay, so that is part of the challenge for people, because this is going to be like, and the only thing I can think of that immediately comes to mind is someone with diabetes. There are certain things they have to do on a regular basis and certain things they have to make sure they don't do, as, for instance, their diet.
Exactly. And the thing about diabetes is the fact if you're not taking your insulin on a regular basis, you know almost immediately that you've missed a dose. Whereas with HIV, it could be weeks or months before you really start to see some kind of side effect of not having taken it.
With people not getting deathly ill and dying right away from AIDS, what have you seen over the years as far as attitudes about the disease?
I think a lot of the attitude has changed that it's really not an issue anymore. Where, in my eyes, and I think people that are living with it and have loved ones that are infected, it really is an issue. That when people talk about being cured of HIV, a lot of times it's really not being cured, it's just that they've managed to get their symptoms to a manageable state. I think there needs to be a lot more public awareness about the fact that HIV is still out there and still affecting close to 56,000 people in the United States each year. For an industrialized nation like the United States, I think that kind of number is just totally ridiculous. That's way too many.
One thing I don't see, or at least I don't see reported in the same way, are people dying of AIDS-related illnesses and of it being reported that way. But are people still dying of AIDS-related illnesses?
There are still people that are dying of them, yes. But, I mean, people, because of the stigma involved with HIV, that people don't want other people to know that that's what they had, it just isn't reported that way. A lot of the early days when people were being reported as being having died of AIDS-related illnesses, many times it was not even necessarily by their own doing, but because they were outed as being HIV positive.
I'm sorry.
And I think that's kind of changed. I mean, because of the laws and disclosing somebody else's status is very illegal anymore, those kind of things aren't happening as much as they once did, like back in the 80s.
Do you think that also affects how careful people are to avoid getting HIV?
I think so. I think when people don't see it as a threat out there, that it's not something that they can catch, I think people kind of get very lackadaisical about it. I speak with quite a few university groups, and it's kind of amazing when you talk to them that when they're in their hometown, say if they're up in Chicago or East St. Louis or something like that, that yes, they're very, very cautious, like when they're having sex. But when they come down here, they don't see it as a threat, so they're much more lax about taking the proper precautions.
And that's something I'm wondering with the clientele you deal with. Are they mostly people who have had a sexual-related transmission of the disease? Do you have people who have it because they were using drugs with needles?
We have some IDU, intravenous drug users, but predominantly it is from sexual transmission. There are a few, of course, in the area also that were born with HIV, I mean, that are now in their 20s and 30s, that they were very fortunate. They managed to survive early childhood with the disease and now are up there in years.
And that's, you know, the question I was just about to ask you is if you were working with any families who had children or infants with HIV infections. But it sounds like you have the other end of the spectrum with those same group of people who were born with HIV infection.
Yeah. It's really nice that the number of infants born with HIV has decreased considerably. I think right now we're looking at maybe two or three a year in the state of Illinois, but still that's two or three that are infected when they're born.
We're talking about then it's possible if a pregnant mother is HIV positive that there are steps they can take to keep the virus from going into the newborns.
Oh, exactly. I mean, because of the way the virus is transmitted to the infant, it's not necessarily during while the fetus is gestating, and that it's through the birthing processes with all those the blood and all the secretions and stuff like that is when the fetus is actually infected. So the child is basically HIV negative until that birthing process.
How much money does GCAP spend each year on just getting all its work done?
We have annual budget of around $175,000 right now.
Okay. Paid staff of?
One.
Do you have a lot of volunteers working with you?
We have quite a few very dedicated long-term volunteers that really help out with all of our fundraising events and with just about anything else that we need them to. All we have to do is call and they'll be glad to help out, but we could always use more.
I understand you have three main fundraising events every year. Do you have other ways of raising money?
Really, we haven't tried. We do a little bit of direct solicitation, but we pretty much rely on those three events. Otherwise, it's the generosity of people in the community plus then grant money.
Okay. What are the avenues of grant money for an organization like yours?
There are several through the state of Illinois. Housing opportunities with people with AIDS. There's some general revenue funding. Then we also, the city of Urbana helps fund emergency assistance for people that live in Urbana, both the city of Urbana and Cunningham Township.
Okay, so it's stuff from the state and the city of Urbana at this
right.
point.
And then the HOPWA funds, of course, are from our federal funds that is a pass-through through the state of Illinois.
What's the larger part, the private donations or the government grants?
The government grants, right, at this time. But and with the fact that you never know when those are going to go away, we would really like to work on increasing our private donations.
So about how much are you getting from private donations now?
Average after net expenses for various things, we're looking at probably about $50,000 to $60,000 a year.
Have donations from the public gone down over the years since the disease has taken a lower public profile?
They have gone down somewhat. I mean, I think it's just the population that it's affecting anymore has kind of changed the dynamic of the donor base a little bit too. I mean, so many of the people that were personally affected are getting older. I mean, we're really trying to get a younger group of people involved in the organizations, but it's just really a hard sell.
Sounds like there was a certain generation that was affected, which is now, say, before the new medications came in the 1990s, and now that generation, which was the hardest hit, is now getting older.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just that, I mean, it's trying to, now the thing, like we had talked about, now that things are a little bit more manageable, it's just not seeing quite as much of a threat, so the younger, it seems like a younger generation just hasn't been enlightened as to how this disease can affect them and their friends and family.
And that's the question. Do you see the same number of people getting HIV infections as it was, say, 10, 20 years ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the rate of infection hasn't changed at all. I mean, it's staying
Up or down?
It's staying pretty steady at the 56,000 for the past 10 years, which is alarming. But I think because of the medications, it's just not considered to be that much of an issue anymore.
Have the effectiveness of the medications changed over time? Has there been anything new in the last few years?
They keep coming out with new ones because for one reason or another, somebody might become get to the point that what they have been using doesn't work well. So they keep going from one series of drugs to another. And the pharmaceutical companies keep coming up with more and more different ways to fight it.
So are they just keeping up, or are they getting ahead of it a little more? Is the quality of the care getting better?
I think slowly the quality of care is getting better. I think they're starting to understand the disease more and more with each set of new drugs that come out. It's just a fine line. When are they going to actually be able to make that leap from treating it to actually being using what they know as preventative?
Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess that's the big question there is, I'm just asking because you're not a doctor, but I'm sure you follow this more closely, is what you hear about progress being made towards either a vaccine or a cure?
I'm really not sure. I mean, that I'd like to think that there's definitely being work done on a vaccine. But I mean, there's also reasons for us not to have a vaccine. Put that in there. But cure, there's always things out there. There's some stuff been done in Germany with some bone marrow transplant with what is called the Berlin patient that supposedly now for 4 years has no sign of the disease, but there needs to be a lot more work. This wouldn't be the first time that something like that has come out. So I think it's something that, I mean, is going to have to be studied more and see exactly if it can be replicated and see how that works.
Okay. Going back to the earlier comment you made about how medications sometimes lose their effectiveness and pharmaceutical companies have to come up with something else, have you gone through that experience yourself where a medication you were depending on just didn't work so well anymore?
No, I've been very fortunate. I've only gone through two different main sets of treatment. And the only reason we changed from one set to another was because one of the components of the first ones had a possibility of having adverse effects on my heart. It was a very low percentage, but because I already had high cholesterol and high blood pressure, after a lot of talking with my doctor, going back and forth for several months, we decided we'd switch to a different set of medications.
side effects? Are there side effects to all this stuff?
Oh, just a few. I mean, it could be everything from just the usual, like people get with a lot of medications like diarrhea and nausea, to muscle cramps, neuropathy, where they lose the feeling in their extremities, terrible headaches. Some people have very vivid dreams on a medication called Efavirenz. So, always going to be something. A lot of them definitely do affect the cholesterol in a person's bloodstream, so they're having to take cholesterol-lowering medicine to keep those levels at a regular level.
No HIV medications found to lower cholesterol yet?
Not yet, no. So,
well, that really puts it in a different picture, because earlier you were talking about people have to remember to take their medications, and they have to remember that their energy level may only go so far, but you also have to live with side effects which may not be as bad as, say, AZT when it was first introduced as one of the first treatments, but they can still be pretty substantial.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as a person living with HIV, you kind of just learn that that's part of the life that you live. I mean, I try not to dwell on that, because I think if I did, it'd be very hard to get up in the morning. But, every day that you have something, I mean, whether it be just an upset stomach or a headache or whatever, that, I mean, there's always something there that if you really wanted to dwell on it, you could find that, yeah, if it wasn't for the HIV meds or something like that, or because I was infected, I wouldn't be feeling like this.
Is that a challenge for some of your clients, just being able to keep their spirits up?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's like with any kind of long-term illness, I think people have issues with having to deal with the fact that this is something they have to live with day in and day out for the rest of their life.
Boy, that's a down way to end.
I know, I'm sorry.
What, you know, when you look for, you know, a positive sign for just having to deal with what this, what do you have to tell people?
I just look at it this way. It's like, it's one more day that I get to go out there and make a difference in people's lives. I mean, that each one of us, no matter how small it is, we do make a difference. It doesn't have to be anything necessarily really profound, but just simple acts of kindness can always make a difference.
Okay. Well, Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate it.